Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you here with us listening. Also pleased to have back here once again on the program, Brian Johnson. He is associate professor in the Department of Journalism here at the U of I. He teaches photojournalism. He's director of graduate studies in the Department of Journalism. He has been taking pictures for a long time. He's been a newspaper photographer as well as being a teacher. And for quite a few years, every once in a while, he's here and we talk about cameras and photography. If you have questions about technique, things that you can do to get better pictures, I'm sure that he will try to help you out. Also, if you have questions that have to do with hardware, whether you are still shooting film or whether you have moved into digital photography, maybe you have some kind of problem you're not quite sure how to solve, or you have to date shot film and you have decided that this year you're going to move into digital and you're just not really quite sure how to approach that, how to think about looking at cameras or maybe how to pick out a camera. Any of all that is certainly fine. I know he would do his best to help you out. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much again for
being here. Yeah, glad to be here.
If you wouldn't mind, I was going to maybe revisit a subject a little bit that we've talked about
sure.
in the past, and that is dealing with old family photos.
Right.
I have a personal interest now because I just now have come into possession of a whole bunch
I understand.
Of them.
I do understand.
And one of the things that really strikes me at looking at some of these pictures, and I'm not sure how old the oldest ones are, but I feel that probably they have to at least date back to maybe the early 1900s, certainly
mm-hmm.
before 1920.
Right.
And I think that there might actually be some pictures there that might be before the turn of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that one of the things that strikes me looking at them is how good they still look.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, and particularly if you compare that to more recent snaps or say in my childhood in the 50s and 60s when we first started to shoot a lot of color pictures. You look
right.
at those pictures.
And they look horrible.
They look horrible.
Many of them do.
But these old black and whites look really, really good.
Exactly. Well, and that's a testament, I think, to the traditional photographic process that it was really all constructed around producing a stable image in the end. I mean, clearly you can get some older photographs that weren't processed well or they've not been stored well. They've been stored on high acid content paper in an inexpensive photo album or in the classic shoebox, and that can deteriorate them. But it's true, and you know the cameras that they're using in those days, they were using a fairly large negative, so that really helps retain a lot of the detail in those images. So it's absolutely true, and you know as long as you try to keep them free of acid content, paper and cardboard and things like that, and don't have them sitting in the sun somewhere, they should mm-hmm. really hold up.
So in terms of just the trying to keep the photographs and keep them in good condition, besides not wanting to have them exposed to light, and also you obviously want to keep them in a place that's dry,
right.
be careful of exposure to high
right,
levels of humidity.
Right.
Anything else that you would suggest in terms of just storing them?
Right. You know, there are some companies that produce archival plastic pages. And the pages, come with different size pockets sort of embossed in them for, mm-hmm. Kind of the classic sizes of photographs. And that's a really awesome way to store them because you can put them in the plastic pages and they're going to be in an album, so they're not going to be exposed to a lot of light. It's going to be a fairly consistent environment for them. So that's not a bad way. The other thing, really leading into the second part of your question is if you either scan them in or do a copy shot so that you have a digital file from it, it brings up an interesting issue, though, is that you have to be very careful that you're getting the highest quality copy, digital copy of that image to store it. But then as long as you keep migrating, that data to whatever the new storage medium is, that is actually going to be a really great way to archive some of those images.
Well, I probably want to come back to that a little bit, but I have a caller, and rather than make them wait,
sure.
We talk with them. Someone here in Champaign, and it's line number 1. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, back in the day, I was with film. I did freelance photography for a number of years when I was out of high school, but I gave it up. And but I have a granddaughter now, so I'm in all those questions that David asked about a beginner, you know, that kind of thing in terms of camera and the digital.
Sure.
What would you? I mean, something certainly not on the low end, but you know, that's good quality. That you know, for a number of years. You know, what do you have certain choices, or how does that work?
Sure. You know, what's really great right now is that, you know, we're far enough into the digital photography age that even the less expensive cameras really have pretty good resolution. Most of the less expensive cameras, the imaging chip itself is a little bit small, and that can affect the quality a bit. But, you know, for most mortals, you know, the cameras are good. I think the main thing that I always tell people to look for is, you know, partially the features of the camera, but more than that, how the user will access all the features.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and so what you need to do is you need to look at the menu system that the camera uses. You know, they always have a little LCD screen on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'll push usually some sort of function button to get to the, or a menu button. And I would take a look at that and see if that's easy to use or if it makes sense to you. Some of the lesser expensive cameras, I think, make the, you know, they don't have many features, so it's very simple to use. But that's really the main thing. I mean, I think any of the main companies out there are going to produce a good solid camera. So
we talk at least a few $100s. Or
yeah, I mean, if you're going to spend a couple $100s, you can get a really awesome camera.
Okay. Is there any brand? And when we get up to that level, I mean, some of the names that used to have back in the day, you know, in terms of film.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Canon and Nikon. You know, those guys are still there. Sony now has some digital cameras. Panasonic has some. I mean, Casio, Kodak actually. Has some cameras. You know, the Kodak cameras are priced very aggressively, so I think a number of the Kodak cameras you can get a pretty good deal on. I shoot with Canon equipment, and one thing I've liked about Canon is, for the most part, how they've set up their menu structure and their cameras, I think, you know, makes sense. It's easy to get to.
What happened was that, a few years back, even though I didn't have a digital camera, I took a brief course, you know, over a couple of times with Photoshop, and I was really, because I'd done lab work, you know, I was like,
right.
Photoshop, you know, it doesn't quite translate that way, you know, I mean, in terms of, yeah, sort of, but, I mean, pixels and, you know, losing your negatives and making another one, you know.
Right.
You know, has there been any innovations there, or is still Photoshop the top of the line, or?
Yeah, you know, Photoshop is still top of the line there. One thing that professionals are doing is if the camera has a RAW mode that you can shoot in, that's going to retain the most of the image data that you shoot.
Okay.
And there are some programs out now where they're starting to actually let you get in and edit that RAW data fairly easily.
Okay, well, that'll be a nice start. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Let's go to another call. This is also Champagne, and it's line number 2. Hello.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. My question relates very much to the last caller. So I'm looking to buy sort of a point-and-shoot digital camera, and the purpose is I'm going in to do research in archives, and so I'll be taking photos of text as well as photos of photos, and of maps and so on. And so I'm wondering, rather than buying a big expensive SLR camera, I'm interested in something a little bit more moderate.
Sure.
Price, and I'm looking for any advice on pixels and
right
lenses and so on.
Exactly. You know, tell me a little bit about how much of, you know, so the manuscripts and things that you're photographing, is there detail that's inherent in there that you're trying to retain, or is it just to
potentially? I mean, one of the things that I'm interested in is maps, and
right.
So there's going to be a lot of detail in that. I may end up having to take multiple photos of those,
right,
to get the composite. But I guess I haven't seen the archives, so I'm not sure.
Right, sure.
Some
sure.
of them will be handwritten, some of them won't. So.
Right, right. You know, for that type of work, what's interesting is that there are some kind of point-and-shoot cameras that are a little bit more expensive.
Uh-huh.
And what's great about those cameras is they start to have a couple of features that it's going to really help for that kind of work.
Okay.
You know, one feature is that the lens that comes with the camera is going to be of a higher quality.
Uh-huh.
And they're also going to have a slightly larger imaging sensor.
Okay.
With some of the cameras. And even though, you know, an 8-megapixel camera seems like it ought to be the same as any old 8-megapixel camera, that's not exactly true, because if the imaging sensor is, you know, a half inch, you know, kind of rectangle size compared to, you know, 2/3 of an inch, you know, or 1 inch, or, you know, 1.5 inches, I mean, the larger the imaging sensor, the better. The better quality of the picture you're going to end up with.
Okay.
So,
and is that going to be something that they're going to list on their specs for the camera?
Yeah.
Or just look for
right. You know, usually you need to get into the specs and look at the size of the imaging sensor. Normally they'll have a size, you know, it's like, you know, 1 over 2.5 inches or, you know, whatever.
Okay.
I know that Canon has a camera that's, it's the G9 camera.
Okay.
You know, it's still going to be close to $400, though.
Okay.
But it is kind of a point and shoot, but it, you know, again, it has a higher quality lens, and that might be something that you want to look at. I think that Panasonic also has one in that range, kind of. but it is something that you want to look at.
Okay.
You know, clearly having a camera that can shoot, you know, with more pixels.
Uh-huh.
But by the time you're up around 8, 9, 10, 12 megapixels, that's going to be pretty good for just about anything that you're going to want to do.
Okay.
I would also pay attention to the light.
Okay.
Where you're shooting. And, you know, depending upon how long you're going to be there and how many documents, even to get a copy stand, you know, so you can, you know, put your camera on the copy stand and it, you know, puts it, you know, parallel to the surface where you're going to take your photograph.
Uh-huh.
You know, that can be a really handy thing. But barring that, you know, if you're just there kind of by yourself, you know, without a copy stand, I would, you know, try to get as much light on your subject as you can.
Okay.
Because that's something else that a lot of times we don't think about. Many times with these cameras, their low light level recording capability varies pretty dramatically. So if you're in low light, the image tends to be kind of grainy, you know.
Okay.
But if you have more light, it's less grainy and gives you a better quality image.
Okay. And these copy stands, are these particular for cameras, or are you talking about
Yeah, usually you can get them, you know, specifically for, you know, the kind of work that you're doing. Some archives actually will have a copy stand, you know, already there for, you know, whatever duplication work they're doing themselves.
Okay.
So.
And one last question, if it hasn't escaped me.
Sure.
the text feature, is that something that's common on a lot of cameras now? Or is it once I sort of look at the lens and the imaging sensor that I've heard that that's a setting on some cameras?
Yeah, I don't, you know, that's a setting I haven't really seen. Many of them do have a close-up feature, though.
Okay.
Dave and I were talking earlier, my wife is a cake decorator, and uh-huh. She does these awesome cakes. And I have an older version of the Canon G9 camera, but with those cameras, you can get in so close.
Okay.
Usually they have like a flower mode.
Oh, okay.
Where you right. can get in close. But then right. closer than that, they also have a manual focus mode. So that can help you quite a bit as you're, you know, trying to shoot some of these, you know, maps and things and trying to get in close for some detail shots.
Okay, great. Thanks for your advice.
Right, yeah. Thank you. Other questions are welcome. Brian Johnson's our guest. He is associate professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois. He teaches photojournalism, and every once in a while he's here on the program and we talk about photography and cameras. So give us a call if you have a question. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455.
And David, you know, that the last caller and your first question really are related in a way. How do you, you know, do copy shots? How, yeah. You know, if you have these old photographs. A friend of mine who works at the News Gazette still, Robert K. O'Daniel, he had done some tests comparing scanning in photographs or using a high-quality digital camera to photograph them. And he actually found that using the camera and doing a copy shot gives you a higher quality result than the scanner. And again, if you're going to spend all the time, you're going to do this once, you really want to think about that. How am I going to set all of this up beforehand so that as you're going through, you don't get two-thirds of the way through and talk to someone and they say, oh, you should have been doing, you know, this instead.
Yeah. Well, that's what was indeed one of the things that I was thinking about, because I guess for a long time, if you were going to make a copy of a photograph, you didn't have the negative. That's the way you did it. You took a picture of it.
Right.
And there are particular techniques to do that where you set up and you have a thing that holds the camera and you want it lit so that
right.
you get a good flat lighting on the surface, so
exactly.
you know, so there are definite established ways to do that.
Right.
Now, though, that we have scanners,
right.
that makes it a lot easier
exactly.
to do.
And you know, if I had to choose between a scanner or a camera without a tripod or without a copy stand, I'd probably choose the scanner. But even with scanners, you know, there are a number of different flavors. You know, mm-hmm. you want to look at the dynamic range that they can record, and, you know, how much resolution they use, you know, how accurate is the color, you know. So, you know, again, there's, you know, $50 scanners and there are, you know, $8,000 scanners. Mm-hmm. So you want to, you know, just because you have a scanner or a camera doesn't mean that they're all created equal.
Another thing that I have done, I'm sure a lot of people have done, is simply take them down to a place where they have copiers and make a Xerox.
Absolutely.
And actually,
and
I've been impressed at just how
amazing
good to put it on a copy machine and make just how good
is.
It looks.
Right, right. You know, the only disadvantage there is, you know, you've got to, you know, once it scans it, it can make multiple copies, but then the next time you want copies, you have to go back. You know, it's not giving you a file. You know, most color copiers, you know, the color copier technology it's basically a color laser printer. You can buy fairly inexpensively color laser printers now that do a pretty awesome job for much less per print than an inkjet printer. So, you know, if people are going to be making a lot of prints, you know, by the time you spend $60, $80, $90 for a set of inks, you know, it doesn't take long to make up the difference between, you know, spending $300 on a color laser printer versus getting the free inkjet, but then, you know, making it up and buying all the ink.
Okay. I have another caller here. Let's talk with them. In Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Cleaning out some closets, I came across some stereo slides that were my grandfather's.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering, what's the best way to put them in digital form so they still retain that whole stereo look?
Right. So the main thing is that, you know, with each image, you want to be sure that you're going to, you know, scan those in so that both of the images look consistent to each other, so that, you know, the lightness, the darkness, the contrast, all that is the same. As far as actually seeing them in three dimensions when it's digital, there are ways to do that, but it usually involves special equipment and, you know, special polarized glasses that you're going to wear. You know, but once you scan in the images, you know, the stereo effect matters largely on how getting the images the precise distance apart from one another.
Okay.
But there are some fairly inexpensive kind of stereo viewers if you have an actual print from it. So if you, you know, scanned in these stereo slides and then could print them out, I'm sure if you did a Google search on stereo photography, you can make these fairly simple kind of little eyeglass things where there's just the divider right at the bridge of your nose to, it's kind of like a blinder on a horse so you don't see the other image.
Okay.
And then you kind of slide the stereo image forwards and back until it comes into focus for you.
Okay.
So, but I think the main thing is you know, try to, if you're going to scan in the images to save them in that way in a digital format, you know, be sure that the images are consistent with, each image is consistent with the other image. And then, you know, when you're going to print them out, you need to put them in a layout so that they're the right distance apart from one another to maintain that stereo effect.
And would it be better to do that if you had a scanner yourself, or should I take it someplace professionally to get the quality?
Yeah.
They're awesome slides.
Exactly.
Some of them is just incredible.
Exactly. You know, there are inexpensive ways to have outside outside companies do the scanning. But again, you want to be sure that, as you say, it's a professional job. You know, when you're scanning in slides, you can get some, you know, reasonably inexpensive slide scanners. But because, I'm guessing, are these mounted in a stereo mount? Right. So that's going to be the harder thing. And again, I think I would do a Google search on, you know, stereo slides, and I'm sure there are people in the country that do it. But it's going to be a fairly unusual thing, so you'd probably need to send them off somewhere to have them scan them in.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
all right, thank you. Again, we're about midway through here with our guest, Brian Johnson. He is an associate professor in the Department of Journalism, where he teaches photojournalism. He's also director of graduate studies in the Department of Journalism, and for a long time now has been stopping by here to talk about photography. If you have practical kinds of questions having to do with technique or having to do with hardware, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Another one of the things that I have been thinking about and is the media whatever that we have now for trying to preserve the images,
right?
And now that you can digitize them, it seems to be a great opportunity. You want to do everything you can to take care of the originals,
right?
But it is also possible to make these digital images, and you can burn them onto some kind of photo CD or something like
right.
that. And I guess, though, my question, and I suppose I'm thinking back to the day when audio CDs first became popular, and people were saying, well, we don't know how long these things are going to be good for.
Right.
Now, I'm sure, I don't know about you, I'm sure I have audio CDs that are way more than 20 years old and they still play.
Right.
But there still seems to be some question about just how stable
right.
these things are going to be.
Exactly. And, you know, there are some blank CD and DVDs that you can get that are specifically engineered for archival use, where they're, you know, certified, you know, for 100 years. Not that the company will be around in 100 years, and you know, are you going to take it back and say, "I want my 50 cents back for this disc"? But I think the issue is once you have that data, and it's true for any computer data at all, you need to keep migrating it forward. So if you had that 8-track tape, you know, you'd have to put it on the cassette tape and then put it on the CD, and yeah. you know, now you can put it on a DVD. Something people want to be very careful about as they do this, though, is that the format they're saving that image in, be sure it's not compressing that image to a great degree. So JPEG is a great compression scheme that most digital cameras use. But if you open up a JPEG in Photoshop and then save it again as a JPEG, and then you open it up later and save it again as a JPEG, each time you save it again as a JPEG, it's re-JPEGing it. Uh-huh. You know, so you can start to lose quality for each derivation of that image. So, you know, always, as you say, always have that original. So if you save those original JPEGs, if that's what it's in, or even better, if you shoot in the RAW mode, you know, then you're not going to have degradation of that image. But you want to be sure that you keep migrating that forward. So if we have, you know, like Blu-ray DVDs that you can store 50 gigabytes on the disk, okay, you migrate it to that. If that becomes the winner in the race of high-definition DVD. And then as we have, you know, what hollow storage or holographic, you know, cubes or whatever we have, mm-hmm. you know, you just have to keep moving it forward so that people in the future, they don't have to find some old dusty DVD player, you know, to be able to read that data. Mm-hmm. So that's really the issue.
All right. Let's talk with some other folks in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I heard Professor Johnson speak on your show a couple of years ago, and I was in the market then for an SLR digital camera for the first time converting from my old film SLR. And I took his recommendation and ended up with the Digital Rebel, and I'm really thrilled with it. Been using it for a couple of years, and I'm happy, but I feel like I'm only scratching the surface, and I'm wondering if there's only if there's a local class that could teach me specifically on a SLR digital camera. I'm not real patient to make my way through a book on doing that.
Right, sure. Sure. I don't know if Urbana Adult Education still offers a photo course. I used to teach that course for a number of years, and then one of my former students, also an awesome shooter, Brian Stauffer, took it over, and I think they're still running that. So I would look at Urbana Adult Education, and then I would also look in the Champaign Park District and see if they have anything.
Okay.
Something else that's been happening that's kind of neat is that there are companies that make instructional DVDs, and sometimes if it's just a technique thing, that can be a useful thing. You know, something else you could do, there's a Champaign County Camera Club, and, you know, that's a really great venue because there are some really awesome shooters in that group. They are really interested in photography and exploring the possibilities.
Okay.
So I would look into the Champaign County Camera Club. In fact, they have a photo contest that's running. I think they're going to start accepting entries sometime soon here. So that would be a good way to, you know, kind of get in contact with those people. They always have the show at Lincoln Square.
Yeah, I've participated in that before.
Okay.
I'm not so much technical. I could probably benefit from that because, boy, my first camera class was in high school, and I don't want to tell you how long ago that was.
Sure.
Do you know, does Parkland run anything? Because I'm thinking, I don't want just a basic class.
Right. You know, Parkland had courses, and I'm not sure if they still do. I'm sorry that I'm not more up on what Parkland offers, but Parkland would be an awesome choice. And I would think they're still offering some photo courses. I haven't heard anything that they weren't.
Okay.
I think that would be a great source.
Thanks for suggesting the camera club, because if somebody has the same camera and more experience, they could be real helpful too.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you. On to another call here. This is someone in Rantoul, line 3. Hello.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Two questions, and I'll ask them now. I just get off the horn. First of all, my photography is sort of narrowly focused industrial photography, where I used a Leica M4P on a tripod, pneumatic release, incident light measurement, and I use a light slide projector for giving my seminars, and I really look for maximum color correction, resolution, and depth of field. Two things is, can I duplicate that on digital cameras if I go to a next step and get rid of slides? And the next thing is, my slide collection, can I get that accurately put onto the digital format and be able to project it without the lights projector using a whatever format that's available, you know, putting them on digital? And the other thing is that's enough. I'll just get off the line.
All right.
Okay. You know, so the caller was using some really awesome equipment, you know, the Leica equipment was renowned for the quality of their lenses, and the Leica slide projectors were awesome. You know, they're expensive, but they really, you know, maintain the quality of the image. So, you know, can you duplicate that in digital? You know, with some of the newer cameras, you know, Canon, Nikon, they both make full frame cameras that the image sensor is the same size as a 35-millimeter frame. And if you're using, you know, their L series or their professional series lenses, you know, and those cameras are, you know, 12 megapixels and up, you're going to get a pretty good, you know, representation of that. In fact, some of the camera magazines have done tests, you know, where they compared it, you know, is this as good as film? And they found that by the time you're up around 8 megapixels that you could, you know, really deal with about the same quality as, you know, like a 100-speed film. Something that I'd recommend for people that really want to maintain the quality of their images, though, all the higher-end cameras will have this RAW mode. And basically, when you take a picture with a digital camera, there's some processing on that image that the camera does. But in the RAW mode, it just basically saves literally the RAW data that the imaging sensor received. And there's really, it's phenomenal what you can do with these images as far as color correcting and all of that and the sharpness that it's going to maintain from there. As far as sending the slides out and getting, you know, high-quality digital scans, yeah, there are definitely companies that do that. It usually isn't cheap, but, you know, even at that, I think you can get, you know, some of these, it isn't like they're going to cost $100 per scan, although you can, you know, get scans that are of, you know, of that kind of price range. But, yeah, I think it'd be worth finding a professional, you know, scanning outlet. There, we used to have some in town. I don't know. I haven't, since I've been shooting digital, I haven't really paid much attention to what's out there in scanning. Even if the caller wanted to buy a scanner for himself to scan the slides in, some of the more expensive kind of personal scanners, you know, those can do a really good job too. So I guess it just depends on where the, you know, what kind of quality level the caller wants to maintain. And sometimes what you can do is, you know, send out, you know, a sample slide or two and have them scan it and then look at it and see what you think.
For you talked earlier about the fact that now there are a lot of scanners that are available just, you know, for individual home use, and that there also can be a big spread in price.
Right.
You can get one that's pretty cheap, and then you could spend some significant money.
Right.
How much money do you need to spend to get something that's of – it doesn't have to be professional grade, and yet you don't want the cheesiest one
right.
that you possibly
right.
can get.
You know, and again, I mean, as we started out the show – as the digital photography world is more mature now, for really comparatively not that much money. So for, you know, a couple hundred dollars, you know, you can get a fairly decent scanner that's going to be, you know, kind of a flatbed scanner. Mm-hmm. Some of these scanners advertise a transparency adapter. So it's basically a light that goes on, you know, instead of the normal cover for the scanner, it actually is a light source, so you can, you know, scan negatives and slides. Some of those will work okay, but if you're really interested in scanning in negatives and slides, you want to get a dedicated scanner that just scans in negatives and slides. And, you know, again, comparatively, because when I, you know, got the first scanner that we had at the university, back in 1989, we paid $8,000 for it, and it took forever to scan. It came up with a pretty decent image, but, yeah. you know, it was $8,000. Yeah. So now, you know, for a couple hundred dollars, you know, $500, you can get actually a very great scanner. You know, clearly the more you spend, sometimes, again, it's going to be a greater dynamic range. You know, the range of from light to dark that it can record and the color depth of that image. Some of the more expensive, you know, slide and negative scanners will also let you scan in larger size negatives. So it's not just 35 millimeter, but, you know, possibly up to 2.25 and, you know, 4x5 if you're going to spend enough money.
questions about photography, cameras, digital film, any and all of that, certainly welcome here this morning. We have about 15 minutes left with Brian Johnson, who is associate professor in the Department of Journalism here at the U of I, teaches photojournalism, has been a newspaper photographer, and has been taking pictures for a long time. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Now here, someone who was listening to our conversation here and says that they know of at least one local firm that does scan slides and transparencies. It's called Scanix.
Right.
S-C-A-N-I-C-S. They're on South Neal. Their number is 621-9152. So you're
exactly
familiar with them?
You know, I haven't seen any of their work. I've seen their advertisements, though. And, you know, what's really awesome about having a local place to take your scans is that you're not sending them through the mail. You can talk with them. You can, you know, you can really get a feel for, you know, what you're going to get. So I would always try to check out the local vendor first. That would far and away be my preference.
Okay. So you can look the folks can look them up or just look in the Yellow Pages and see what
yeah,
other kind of,
I think,
would it be list? How would that be listed?
Yeah.
Photo
boy,
processing?
I guess I'd look under photos, you know, but the good thing about the phone book is they have the business white pages, so you can just look them up under Scanix.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. We have a number of callers, and we will get right back to it. In fact, the lines are full, so we will start out with someone in Urbana this time around here, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hopefully a simple question.
Okay.
Why do I need to rotate a circular polarizer?
I don't know that you would need to rotate a circular polarizer, because if it's truly a circular polarizer, it should be the exact same no matter where you had it.
I have a Nikon D70 with a circular polarizer on it, and I find that as I change my orientation to the sun, by rotating the circular polarizer, I change the hue of the sky.
That's really interesting, yeah, because that's not how circular polarizers are supposed to work.
Well, I guess that's why I can't find my answer.
Yeah, yeah, that, you know, it doesn't, you know, make sense. Unless it's not truly circular, you know, maybe it's a slight elliptical polarizer effect. You know, a lot of times the cameras needed the circular polarizer because of the way the light meters worked.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a regular polarizer, you'd fool the light meter and give you an incorrect exposure. Sometimes it was also the autofocus mechanism that needed it. So that's the only thing I could think of, is that maybe it's truly not a circle, but that it's maybe elliptical slightly in its polarization effect. That's a mystery, and I'm going to look into that when
okay.
we get off.
I happen to have a Hoya HMC multi-coated circular polarizer.
Okay. Let me do some search on that, because that's a good Scooby-Doo mystery to look into.
And where would I find your answer once you figured it out?
People could email me. That's totally fine. At the risk of, you know, having all kinds of spam mail come my way, my email address is bkj@uiuc.edu, and if you want to email me in a week or so,
okay.
I guess it'd be Christmas time. So,
well, you'll receive an email that's titled Circular Polarizer.
Okay, that's great.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And again, to Champagne, this is the next caller. It's line number two. Hello.
Hello. My question relates to the discussion about archival scanning.
Yeah.
I was wondering what your recommendations would be for resolution, color depth, et cetera, for archival scans. And I'll just hang up and let you answer on the radio. Thanks.
Okay. So when you're looking at scans, normally what you're looking at is your final file size. Some of it depends on the original, you know, quality of the original and then what you're going to do with the archival image. Usually, the more resolution in the scan, the more expensive it's going to be or the longer it's going to take. So those are all things that kind of come into play. You know, with some raw images at, you know, higher scanning resolution, you can end up with, you know, a 200 megabyte file just for one image. So it isn't, it seems like an easy question, but there's not sort of a one vanilla flavor because there's so many things. You know, what is the original? Is the original text? Because if the original is text, you're going to need a much higher resolution, and then the color depth doesn't quite matter as much. Whereas if you're, you know, scanning in artwork, I was on a committee for Fine and Applied Arts in the library where they're looking at creating a digital image library. And, you know, for the art historians that were on the group, you know, the color accuracy was so important. So there isn't a really, you know, easy answer to that. But, you know, certainly, you know, 32-bit color would be a place to start. And for the resolution, if it's a photograph and you're going to print it to a, you know, normal printer, you can easily get by with 300 DPI. You can get by with 200 DPI even, really. If it's text, you know, if you can scan it at 600 DPI or 1200 DPI, you know, that's what you ought to do.
Okay, I hope that helps. Let's talk with an Urbana person next, line 3.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. Just a quick question, hopefully. Pretty naive about all this, so sorry if it's beneath you a little bit.
Oh, but not a problem.
I'm interested in scanning old family photographs, and I want to make DVDs for a CD, whatever,
yeah.
Old photographs.
Sure.
And I've read about companies you could send away and get them put on a disc, and I've also looked a little bit at scanners, and I was wondering specifically about some of those all-in-one printer scanner, I don't know, do the dishes kind of place.
Right.
You know, and is that at all something I should look at? Because I'm not sure I just want a scanner because it's more of a project I want to do rather
right.
than I'm going to do this as a hobby forever.
Right, exactly. You know, the all-in-one units are neat because they're basically, it's a color copier. The interesting thing is inkjet printers can produce an awesome, awesome picture fairly expensively. A color laser printer can produce an awesome picture for quite a bit less money. So,
interesting.
Yeah, so I've been steering people to look at some of the color laser printers, and they do have the all-in-one color laser printer scanners.
Okay.
You know, when you buy the color laser printer, it's going to be more expensive up front. So it might be, just for a printer, maybe, you know, $200. The all-in-ones, you know, maybe, you know, $400, $500, $600. But when you think about, you know, how much inkjet ink costs, and how often you have to change the cartridges, it really doesn't take that long before you've made up that difference.
Ah, okay. No, you've been helpful.
Good.
So an all-in-one isn't isn't a bad choice.
Yeah, because, you know, most of them are going to have at least, you know, the least expensive scanner that they have, and, you know, that's what you would buy as a standalone unit also. So I've actually, you know, some of them are going to be perfectly okay.
Okay. No, thank you so
All right.
much.
Very good. Thank you. And again, we'll go to somebody else in Olney and on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yes, this mm-hmm. is John Snyder at Olney, Illinois, and mm-hmm. I'm still shooting an old Nikon F3 35mm, and I've had it for about 26 years. I'm not into the digital thing or any of that. Do you see a time when the 35 film won't be available or as well as the processing for it?
Yes, and it's sad. You know, I think it's going to be available for a long, long time, but what will happen is it'll be more of a specialty item that, you know, the local retailers aren't going to have it, so it's going to be the sort of thing that you're going to have to probably mail order, or if you're in a larger city, get it there. So I do see the day that'll happen. You know, it's just purely a matter of economics. You know, I've seen a number of photo finishers go by the wayside. You know, even Kodak, you know, they're really trying to get out of doing film, you know, which is kind of a tragedy. You know, Ilford, it was a company that, you know, produced, it was an English company that made film and photographic paper. You know, they've been sold off to a different company, and, you know, they're not doing much with it either. So
So how many years down the road do you think this is, you're looking at something like
Looking into my crystal ball, I would say, if I were guessing, I would say within 5 years, it's going to be very scarce locally, you know, and, you know, probably in 10 years, I think it's going to be a specialty item only.
So old Nikon equipment that used to be valuable is going to be a collector's item then.
Yeah, I mean, that I've got a whole bunch of Canon equipment sitting in my basement that is film-based. And, you know, I for everything that I'm doing, you know, I'm just going to shoot digital.
Right.
And it is. It's a great shame. Because that equipment is great equipment, and it's great to learn with. It's just, you know, the economics are working against it, I'm afraid.
Right. Well, I'd had people say that, you know, you wouldn't be able to get 35 film, and I thought, well, there's a kajillion of them out there, and so.
Right. And, it, you know, I think you'll be able to get it, as I say, for a long, long time, but it'll just become more and more of a specialized item that, you know, like for people that want to make their own root beer, you know, you just can't walk into the, you know, for the to the pharmacy and get, you know, the syrup for it, you know, but you can still get it if you know where to go to find it.
Right, right. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. So that means that then if you want to continue to shoot film, it might be that where you live, for example, that there would be no local photo processing. You'd have to send your film off
absolutely
somewhere.
Yeah.
And someone somewhere would develop it and make prints for
it. Right.
But it could be just a matter of, you might not have a lot of choice, and you wouldn't be able to take it right down, have somebody turn it around for
right.
you in an hour and give you pictures. Back.
Exactly. No, and that, you know, that day is definitely coming rapidly, I think.
Another caller here, back to Rantoul. I think it's an earlier caller who wanted to ask a follow-up question. Go ahead.
Yeah, quick comment. Years ago, I learned that there's a big difference between Tiffin polarizing filters and Hoyas. Now, I don't know if the difference is still the same. Of course, the cost was different.
Right.
Anyhow, I wanted to say, if I bought a regular conventional slide duplicator to go on a regular single-lens reflex camera, could I take that regular slide duplicator and put that on a 24x36 millimeter digital camera and get a better job?
Yeah, you know, that's... Sure, okay. You know, that isn't a bad option at all. And, in fact, again, going back to... RKO Daniel at the News Gazette. I think it was RK who came up with this, but he found that with a single lens reflex camera with a macro lens on it, and what he did is he got a PVC pipe, you know, the kind that go from like a 2-inch to a 4-inch size, and if you put the macro lens in the smaller end of that, and you had, you know, the slide on a light table, that was like the perfect duplicator for that. It was really inexpensive. But, yeah, you can get slide duplicators that connect to the camera, and that actually would be a really awesome way to...
So there, actually, again, you're taking a pic. You're putting
right.
the slide right up to the camera. You're taking a picture of the slide
exactly.
image.
Exactly. Oh, and, you know, really, I mean, that's the basic principle for a scanner, too. You know, I mean, it's just not, you know, it's a flatbed instead of using a lens.
We're almost out of time here. One thing I was interested in asking, I think that now that probably a lot of computers, home computers, come with some kind of digital image processing software
right.
in there.
Right.
So they're ready to go at some level. Now, I'm sure that they won't allow you to do as much with the image as if you had something like Photoshop, but there, I think probably for some people, Photoshop's going to be way more complicated. They're not going to want to do
right.
all that kind of stuff.
You know, one thing that's really cool is that the digital cameras really produce such a good image overall, even the least expensive ones, that for the most part, there's not much you need to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the classic snapshots people had done in the past never really had much done to them. What's really neat on this same idea is that there are a number of printers now where they have a little screen built right into the printer, and you just put your memory card into the printer and it brings it up on the little screen. You can, you know, crop it and enlarge and do whatever you want. So in a way, people might not even need a computer. Something else I wanted to mention really quickly, there are also digital picture frames. So it's like a, you know, it's an LCD screen that's in a picture frame, and there you don't even need to print it. You just, mm-hmm. you know, load your pictures into that picture frame, and it just runs through them.
I've seen ads for this thing. It's like it does a. You can make it so it will do a slideshow.
Right, absolutely.
And periodically, yep. It'll change and show you a different.
Some
picture.
Of them will play music with it. They have a remote control. Some of them will play video. So it's kind of like in Harry Potter when they open up the newspaper and the image, you know, moves in the newspaper. That's a little bit what these frames are like.
Are there now, as a result of digital photography, do you think actually there are now more people who if you asked them, do you have a camera? Now more people would say, well, yeah, we've got a camera. We take snaps all the time.
Absolutely. I think it has, you know, led to a invigoration or reinvigoration of photography as a hobby. Because there's that instant feedback. There's that instant, yes, my picture worked, because you can see it on the screen on the camera. So I would think that it has increased it.
And do you think, and as a result, because you can store them digitally and you can look at them in a variety of ways like that, are fewer pictures printed or are people printing as many?
I think there are probably fewer pictures printed now. There are people at home who are doing enlargements and things, so maybe they're choosing the one or two best images and doing something with. But, there are photo sharing sites. People are emailing photos back and forth. And so they're not necessarily being printed. They're still being shared to as great a degree, but maybe not in an actual tangible form. They're just in an electronic form.
Yeah. If we're people who will remember having gone to somebody's house for a slideshow, what now are you – are people actually using their televisions to
Absolutely,
do this?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and the person that called about putting family pictures on a DVD, you can do a slideshow that runs as a DVD. So many of the computers that come with imaging software also come with software that they can make a slideshow and burn it to a DVD so people can just slap it in their DVD player.
Mm, okay. Well, I think about how when we first started doing this, digital was this exotic thing and only pro cameras were available.
It's coming, you know.
Thousands of dollars, you know, people were, and it was, and, you know, news photographers who were doing it, and particularly the advantage was that you could be somewhere,
right.
You could shoot the picture, you could transmit it electronically back to your paper, and like that,
right.
Your paper has the work.
Exactly.
And now it's a huge, widespread consumer.
It is. And, you know, again, that instant feedback. I mean, it's really, you know, what made the Polaroid so strong and so interesting. Now we have that with a digital camera.
Well, thanks very much.
Absolutely.
Brian Johnson, he is Associate Professor and Director of Graduate Studies in the Department of Journalism at the U of I. Occasionally he's here, and we talk about cameras and photography.